This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Is it just me, or has TV gotten really complicated? I'm either endlessly searching for my favorite shows or subscribing to a dozen different streaming services to make sure I can watch everything I love. And I'm not even saving that much money compared to my old cable bill. Thankfully, Philo has changed all that for me. One service, all the stuff I need. Philo's got current seasons of the shows I can't miss live on networks like Paramount, A&E, MTV, Discovery, and TLC. Classics like The Office, Martin, and Friends that I never get sick of, and all of the incredible originals on AMC Plus, from Mad Men to Orphan Black. Don't forget their library of more than 75,000 movies and shows, all of which I can save and rewatch anytime for a whole year. Never miss a minute of shows like Gypsy Rose, Life After Lockup on Lifetime, Yellowstone, or Fatal Attraction. Best of all, with Philo, you get all this for just $28 a month. No contracts, no hassles. Just one subscription and a world of entertainment. So go to philo.tv and check it out for a free 7-day trial. That's philo.tv to start watching.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
I love that play. Little zone read, play action, kind of moved towards the line of scrimmage, backed up, sucked everybody up, threw it to Ertz. There's so much that happens when you have a quarterback that needs to be played the way he does, and it gives you a lot of opportunities. Really good win yesterday, 42-19 over the Tennessee Titans, puts them in a really good spot heading into their final four games after the bye week. But more than that, it was that they were back offensively, punted once, didn't get stopped, missed two field goals, or it would have been 48 points. But this was a team that was hitting on all cylinders offensively. Kicker was an issue. We will talk to Ben Standing about that. He joins us right now, courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline, at Ben Standing on X on Twitter. Read him at The Athletic. Listen to his podcast, Standing Room Only. Let's start where we always start. Your big takeaways from the big win heading into the bye week.
Well, that was way more fun. I'll say that, right? I mean, you know, I've thought all along, like, it's easy to say, you know, start fast. You know, that's what teams want to do. I think for this team in particular, it's very important because it allows not just the offense to get momentum, but it puts the defense in a position where they can, you know, rush the passer, which is, you know, be more aggressive with the pass rush versus having to deal with the you know, constant run game, right? I mean, Tennessee got taken out of the run because of the score, and they've obviously struggled against the run this year. But, yeah, I mean, I thought that That was a pretty inspired performance by them. And, you know, you talked about Jaden Daniels, and obviously so much starts with him without question. But I really think what was standing out to me so much in the early part of the season when they were 7-2 wasn't just the wins, but it was how they were just throttling these teams that were, you know, considered bad teams, or maybe teams are a little closer to their level and they're having a bad day or whatever. And they just hammered them. And that was a sign to me that this isn't just about what talent they have. This is about the energy, the desire, the will, all those kinds of things that you hear football coaches preach over and over again. Because, you know, they're not 42-19 better than the Titans or almost any team, but they keep doing this. They hammered Carolina, they hammered Cleveland, etc. And again, those are the bottom teams in the league. We've seen plenty of Washington teams lose to such teams in the past, not to mention just other teams in the league. And I think that's what impressed me as much as anything this year. And then they got back to that form again yesterday. And I also just think that, you know, you mentioned how tricky it is for any defense to deal with a quarterback like Jaden Daniels, who can run the way he can. I keep going back to Brian Robinson. When he is on the field, I just think it makes such a difference for how defenses are going to have to play Jaden Daniels. You know, Robinson's last 100-yard game was week 4 against Arizona. He got hurt the next week against Cleveland, didn't play against Baltimore, and then it's just been kind of limited. You know, there's been an injury pop up here and there. And, you know, I don't know where he's at in terms of the 100% mark, you know, how close he is to being fully healthy. But he certainly looked it, played like it. And when that's happening, I think Jaden Daniels really becomes, you know, I don't say impossible, but borderline impossible to deal with, because now you actually have to pay attention to what's going on between the tackles, and that leaves the outside or open. So, yeah, that was obviously, needless to say, much more of what they're looking to do across the board offensively than we've seen in recent weeks.
I liked one of your lines in your recap of the game on The Athletic. Ben wrote, after more intense scrutiny of offenses fading over the second half of the seasons under former Texas Tech and Arizona Cardinals coach Kingsbury's plan felt like the X's and O's version of a middle finger directed at the noise. The first play, a 10-yard completion, went to McLaurin on the right side. It's also where Washington's top receiver began his route before Daniels found him for the touchdown that made it 28-0. Quinn credited Kingsbury's vision for the turnaround. Look, we've already talked about, you know, the whole idea that his offenses fell apart as being completely debunked for the most part. I think we should get away from that conversation. It's kind of embarrassing to have if you've actually done the homework. But that narrative's been out there. And so do you think that's what he was doing? Was just saying, oh, so my guy's third in the league in reception yardage, lining up primarily on one side. Sure, here's this. Let's watch him catch a quick 10-yard, you know, quick game hitch.
Yeah, I kind of do. I just went back and watched the game replay off the broadcast, and I think was Andrew Catalan. I think he even said on the very first play to McLaurin that that felt purposeful for Kingsbury, and obviously the TV broadcast talks to the staff beforehand, so I don't know what Kingsbury may have said, but yeah, I do think it's purposeful. I mean, look, McLaurin only played 9 snaps on the right side in this game, according to PFF.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you. So, what was the breakdown? Because he was still on the left side a hell of a lot.
Yeah, it was 55 snaps. 9 were on the right. Now, the 9 is the most he's had in a game this year. He had 6 last week and 7 early in a game. I think it was against the Bengals.
So, well, they had the ball more yesterday, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, you can say that, hey, maybe Kingsbury does need to change things up a bit more. He does need to move Terry around. I think that's a reasonable thing to say, which is very different than just saying he has no idea what he's doing, gets stuck in one plan and everything regresses. Right. I think they did that. And I think, you know, I think Terry McLaurin is, this is odd for him as well to be sort of put on one side and not move around as much. But yeah, I mean, I think they had I think they've had conversations in recent, well, I know they have, in recent days and you know, last week or so, and you know, that led to this. So yeah, I mean, I think that's, you know, good. Again, you know, we talk about the NBA and teams that have a supposed big three, right? And you know, essentially you got to have those guys produce, otherwise you're probably going to lose because you're going to be thin elsewhere. But Washington didn't plan it this way, but their big three on offense is basically Jaden Daniels, Brian Robinson, and Terry McLaurin, right? And they all played at a high level yesterday, and that was obviously very challenging for Tennessee to stop. We just haven't seen that as much. I keep going back to Robinson also when Jaden got hurt in the middle of the year. So, you know, that was a game where all their big three was just cooking right off the bat, and you know, they could kind of do whatever they wanted against a defense that, you know, statistically, it's been pretty good this year. So I just think that was, you know, their best players showed up. And, you know, credit also to the offensive line. Let me not skip over them. But, you know, their best players showed up wherever they lined up. And, Tennessee just couldn't do anything about it.
I think actually something that you said is kind of interesting, because you gave the number of times that it was the most that he's lined up on the right side this year, but as a percentage of the snaps, it was lower than the last two or three games. So he's actually been doing it as a percentage of his snaps a little bit more, but because he threw it to him on the right side on the first play of the game, that seemed to be, yes, and I agree with you, a bit of, okay, whatever, experts. How about this? Pretty funny. What else from you? I just spent a little bit of time talking about something that surprised me. I'm curious if you were surprised before the game that Phil Mathis was a healthy scratch. Carl Davis called up. He hasn't played well recently, but to me, that's an indication that he's probably going to stay inactive with Davis and Sheldon Day playing pretty well in his stead as run stoppers in particular.
Yeah, well, you know, I didn't necessarily think this would lead to Mathis being inactive, but when they did the team captains this week, Sheldon Day was one. Now, I haven't kept that close track of like who's been a captain, but I know he hadn't been one, and I'm pretty positive there's other guys on defense who have not been a team captain. I mean, there's, you know, we're to go to Sheldon Day, a guy who I'm sure a lot of people don't even know is on the team. I was like, okay, that's kind of interesting, but okay, sure, whatever. Clearly they do that as an indication of how guys are playing, you know, how they view them. So, okay, so they're viewing Sheldon Day as a guy who's doing well. Cool. Then when the news came out about Mathis being inactive, definitely the first thought was like, well, wait a minute, did he have a last-second injury here? He wasn't on the injury report. Was there an incident? And I was told no on both. And, you know, basically Dan Quinn said after the game that they liked the competition between Mathis and Davis in practice, and they wanted to give Davis a shot. Obviously, I don't think it's that just willy-nilly. I would imagine that, like you said, Mathis has probably not been playing up to snuff the last few weeks. We know we've talked over and over again about the run defense. Not that he's out there the majority of the snaps, but he is still out there. And they wanted to give Davis a shot. Looks like Davis played 14 snaps. Take PFF grades for what they're worth. Not always a great indicator of anything, but, you know, it's something. That PFF had Davis graded as the highest graded defensive player.
Just mentioned that. 14 snaps, but yes.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, look, Davis is a guy that's been around in the league, and sometimes even if the guy isn't the most talented, he just knows his role, what to do. You know, that can be enough versus maybe a younger guy who has a little more explosion, but, you know, that doesn't always stick to the plan. So, yeah, and it was definitely interesting. And also, I think, you know, on the heels of the big transaction news of the weekend, releasing Forbes, right. I mean, it's just another player from that era who at least this team is viewing as not somebody they have to keep on the field.
Yeah, second-round pick, let's not forget, Phil Mathis was. All right, kicker. Gonzalez misses twice from 46 and 52. After they make the decision to move on, at least for the time being, injury-related, I guess. Still a little bit, you know, suspicious of all of the activity surrounding Austin Seibert and the injured list stuff last week. But what do they do now? They do have a bye week. They've got time to seek somebody else. Maybe Justin Tucker will get released by Baltimore after missing three more kicks yesterday. I'd pick him up in a heartbeat. But what do you think they do with a guy that hadn't missed but missed two field goals yesterday? You know, insignificant in terms of the final result of the game like last week's were. But what happens?
Yeah, it's funny. This morning I saw my colleague at The Athletic who covers the Packers. His article today was the Packers have finally solved their kicking problem thanks to McManus. Yeah. So yeah, it's been a journey to say the least. And I mean, look, I think they're going to have tryouts, right? I mean, Zane Gonzalez had made all his kicks prior to this week, and he did make all the extra points after last week's debacle. That needs to be mentioned. But yeah, missing field goals, you know, the only two he attempted, obviously not great. And you know, he was already a guy who was, you know, one of the many of these kickers. He's on the fringe of being on a team or not. So, yeah, I think logically they have tryouts. I mean, it goes back, though, to the same issue that they've had, you know, kind of going back to the summer when, you know, they were waiting for other teams to cut some kickers to give them some options. Well, you know, by now, all the options have been picked over. I have not looked this morning to see who's exactly available, but, you know, whatever. It'll be the same – random journeyman type guys out there. So you're going to roll the dice probably no matter what you do. And I have to imagine they're going to bring in other guys. I mean, this is the perfect week for this, the bye week. The players may be going on vacation, but the front office guys, I imagine, will not be. So, I don't see how you do anything else but look at, see who else is available.
Let me ask you a question right now. Who are Washington's Pro Bowl players?
Oh, I remember I wrote about this a few weeks ago, but I think that was maybe right as the losing streak was starting. I mean, Jane Daniels, right? Terry McLaurin for sure. I mean, granted, receiver is always a pretty deep position, and I'm not saying he doesn't deserve it, but that can always be a little tricky. But, you know, Terry McLaurin. Sam Cosmi, perhaps? I don't know the full landscape of, like, all the guards out there, but I think Cosmi would have to get some consideration. I think Bobby Wagner, partly by the reputation, right? He basically makes the Pro Bowl kind of every year, but also, again, another year with 100 tackles. You know, it's not going to be that complicated to justify. And then after that, I don't know. I think after that, I'm probably reaching at this point, right? I don't know if there's anybody else.
I think Luvu's having that kind of a season. And yeah, by the way, the next year or two for him could be like truly given, like he becomes a perennial. He's their best player on defense. He might be the second best player on the team after Jaden. I mean, it's he or Terry. Those are the two in the conversation. He's really spectacular.
And I think what also impresses me so much about that is teams talk all the time, you know, they want, you know, what was the Scott McLuhan line? I want football players, you know, that whole thing, right?
Right.
Well, Frank, you know, they talked about they want guys who are going to be, you know, energetic, relentless, you know, you played against them, all these things. Well, this guy is the epitome of that. I mean, the energy is just consistently off the charts. And obviously, you know, he's piling up the sacks and all that. So it's one thing to say what you want. It's another thing to then go find it. And oftentimes you see teams, you know, misidentify players or just take what they can get and claim that this is what they wanted. Luvu is, I believe, exactly what they wanted, and he's giving them exactly what they want. So 100%. You know, again, other than just competition at that position, yes, he's absolutely worthy of Pro Bowl consideration.
Denton, is there a batted ball stat? Because he's got to be up there in deflected balls at the line of scrimmage passes. I know there is
for sure. If Denton has a second to look, I can look after we get off. If not, but that's a stat, and he is a president. And also, look, I think you know it's worth noting that you know he's doing this. Not saying he doesn't have any help, but like it's not like the rest of the pass rush. I mean, Dante Fowler's obviously had a surprisingly good year, but like I don't know that I'm viewing him as like the guy who play in, play out is all over the field the way it feels like with Luvu. And then, you know, Daron Payne's obviously been down, and you know, Dorrance Armstrong doesn't have a sack since he got hurt way back in the Ravens game. So Luvu's doing it with teams knowing that he's the guy you gotta stop. But he's just all over the place. Hey, by the way, even in like in the run defense, the second play of the game yesterday, it was clear the defense had a really good read on Tennessee's snap count because the first drive, which the Titans had two false starts, players seemed to be anticipating constantly of what was about to happen. And on the second play, Luvu was like running, like almost like he's ready to go at full speed towards the line before, as the ball is being snapped. And he you know, tackles the running back in the backfield before he could even do anything. Just great anticipation. And again, just so consistent with his energy, and that really stands out.
Well, the third play was the batted ball that got caught by the offensive lineman. You know, that was one of maybe two batted passes or deflected passes, and I think last week he had either two or three. I mean, that's a stat that if you've got double digits for the season at this point, you're in the lead, I would imagine. I don't know if Denton's found it.
So he's been credited, according to PFF, with four batted passes, but he wasn't credited with one yesterday, even though he did.
Well, he did on the third play from scrimmage. He batted it right back to the offensive lineman.
Right. So I don't know why that wasn't
credited. Is that a pass defended stat? Maybe that's two different things. Maybe they call that because he almost picked it off.
Well, no, it's not a pass defended because he only has one pass breakup on the year in coverage.
Okay. I think he, you know, first of all, he's got 8 sacks, I think, on the year. I know Fowler's got maybe the same or a half or sack more. But I know that in the NFC, he's in the top 3 or 4 in sacks. The two guys in Minnesota, Van Ginkle and Greenard, have been near the top. And Dexter Lawrence was near the top for a while. But I don't think he's had one in a while. It may be that he's played one more game than the others. I forget.
Well, yeah. I mean, obviously, Washington's played...
The most games.
More than...
Here's something. I just actually pulled up the sack stats for NFC. Do you know that Aiden Hutchinson is still... I mean, this is how it would have been a runaway defensive player of the year kind of a season for Aiden Hutchinson had he stayed healthy. He had 7.5 sacks in 5 games. He's still 6th in the league, in the conference in sacks, even though he only played 5 games. Luvu is 5th, a half sack behind Fowler and behind the guys that I mentioned, actually, Greenard, Van Ginkle, and Dexter Lawrence, because I think I had looked at it last week. All right, what else? Noah Brown's injury, was that the only one from yesterday?
Far as we know, and we don't know, we didn't get to that with Quinn afterwards. We'll talk to him again today, and then they're gone for the week, so hopefully we have a chance to, or we get to slip that in there, or they give us an update, but, you know, they don't technically have to, so we may have to wait on that. But, yeah, right. I mean, so we'll have to see about that. Obviously, you know, the Marshon Lattimore thing is the one
yes.
we'll all be tracking going when they return for the Saints week. But, relatively speaking, I think they came out of yesterday seemingly fairly healthy.
I think in a game like yesterday, too, Ben, we kind of forget how important Austin Eckler's been to the team. They're going to miss him down the stretch here. And I don't know. He's on injured reserve, which means, what, 4 games before he can be brought back into that 21-day window?
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I think we talked about this last week. Like, I don't want to speculate, and I don't know. But, like, it wouldn't surprise me if we don't see him again this year. And then the question is, you know, where is he at with his injury and his health in general? But you're right. I mean, like, I was surprised to see this. You know, Jeremy McNichols, who is kind of feels like the sort of the Eckler replacement to some degree, he only has 2 catches all season. Like, he's not the guy catching the ball out of the backfield. Now, Robinson can do that a little bit, but obviously you need him primarily as the power back up running up the middle. So, you know, they don't have that guy. You know, even last year, you know, Curtis Samuel was able to fill in that role a little bit. And it'll be interesting to see if Eckler is gone. He, again, will be, as he said, for at least 3 more games. That, you know, how do they adjust to that? Is there something else that they can do? Maybe it's putting – you know, one of these receivers more in the backfield or having one of the tight ends serve that role to some degree. But, yeah, it's going to be it's definitely going to be an impact. No doubt wasn't an issue yesterday. But, you know, having that safety valve was such a, you know, so important. And also the guy who could be that little bit of a change of pace for the way Robinson runs.
Well, they're going to miss him on kickoff returns, you know, flat out. I mean, he was like 3rd in the league in kickoff return average, you know, with a minimum number of returns behind Turpin and I forget who else. But and you didn't have that yesterday from McNichols, although I like the way McNichols runs. I mean, you got to love the way Chris Rodriguez runs too, right? I mean, he is probably their 2nd best runner, just pure runner behind Robinson Jr.
Yeah, I think that's one, you know, we talk about things that Kingsbury, you know, did or didn't do. I you know, in those games where Robinson was out a bit, you know, I thought that Rodriguez should be getting the ball more because he is the one guy besides Robinson who can give you that power. And, I mean, again, not much of a pass catcher. And I'm sure, you know, blocking is a factor. Robinson, I thought, had some really good blocks yesterday in protecting Jaden Daniels. But, I mean, I think it's Rodriguez needs to play. And again, maybe this is the way you use Robinson a little bit more in passing situations, and then you can bring Rodriguez in to fill in the gaps a bit on the ground. But yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I you know, I'm not saying like some other teams should have like snatched him up, but to some degree, you know, you see some running backs around the league and you wonder why nobody else has been willing to give Rodriguez a shot.
All right, 8-5, 4 to go. How many do they get, and where does that land them?
Well, you know, the problem, with, as we know, is like these games are all over the place. Like, you know, 3 weeks ago, we would have said, oh, boy, Atlanta, pretty formidable. Well, now they're down the toilet. The Saints look like they were recovering a bit. Then they lose this week. Philly obviously looks legit. And Dallas, who knows what they're going to be doing in week 18. I think in terms of the playoffs, if they get one more win, I'd like their chances. If they get two, I think that's pretty much, you know, it's not a mathematical lock necessarily, but it feels like that's going to be tough for the Cardinals, the Bucks, or the Rams to catch. I will say Tampa's schedule is scary if you're a Washington fan because it's very simple. They have one game against an actual good team, and every other game is, you know, against one of these teams that Washington's kind of been beating up on as well this year. So they might be the team that can have the chance to go on a run. But, you know, I think you got to feel pretty confident about Washington's ability to get at least one more win here in the next four based on how they played yesterday and their ability to take advantage of, you know, bad teams who make mistakes. They did that yesterday. They didn't against Dallas. They did yesterday. So, you know, I don't know what I'm going to say about it. I'm thinking they can get one or two more wins, but, you know, at this point, to not make the playoffs would be tough. But again, Tampa Bay is the one team I'm a little bit I'm watching.
Well, Tampa's going to probably win the division, so you're not going to have to more likely than not worry about them. I mean, they although, you know, I say that, and literally Chuba Hubbard had to fumble in field goal range in overtime for Tampa to hold on to beat Carolina, who's been playing better. I'll leave you with this, because I did my playoff scenario research this morning. But if they can win three of the final four, and look, they should be favored in three of the final four. They'll be a short favorite at New Orleans. They'll be favored probably by the time we get to Atlanta. And like you said, who knows about Dallas or their state. But Green Bay's the team that they could potentially catch for what would be a crucial difference between being the sixth seed and the seventh seed. The seventh seed's going to have to go to Detroit or Philadelphia more likely than not. That seems like, you know, 8, 9, 10-point underdog territory. Whereas if you get the six, you're in Tampa, you're in Seattle, you're in Arizona, you're in L.A. against the Rams, something like that, with a better chance to at least win one. Because if we're going to be there, why not? Let's try to win one. But they'll own all of the tiebreaker head-to-heads with Green Bay. So just remember, I was the first one to tell you that. All right, anything else?
Well, I just look. I mean, Green Bay's got three games on the road against teams that are currently in the playoffs. So yeah,
I know. Brutal. I mean, that was part of it. At Lions, at Seahawks, at Vikings, they still have on their schedule. So root against Green Bay, Washington fans. Root against Philly too, but the division seems like that is a major long shot at this point. All right, my friend. Good job. Appreciate it.
Absolutely, man. See ya.
Ben Standig, everybody, from The Athletic, at Ben Standig on Twitter. Up next, we'll go around the rest of the league. Washington's game was the only 1 o'clock game decided by more than a touchdown. Really good games, including a snow globe game. We've had two snow globe games in a week and a half. Buffalo was crazy last night. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, and the Team980.com. It's better
over here. Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on a required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies Rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
First down, Saquon. Oh, here he goes. Barkley at the 10, the 5, and the touchdown.
Going around the NFL, Jim Nance on another big touchdown run by Saquon Barkley. That gave the Eagles a 24-12 lead. This game really wasn't that competitive. The final score was 24-19. Baltimore scored with 3 seconds to go in the game. Philadelphia's defense, major shutdown mode once again, holding Baltimore to just 12 points in the real portion of the game. They gave up the one late. There were missed kicks again. I mean, Justin Tucker clearly with the yips right now. He missed 2 field goals. He also missed an extra point in the game. That hurt Baltimore, no doubt. But, man, the pressure on Lamar by Philly in the game defensively, Denton, was outstanding. He only got sacked 3 times, but how many times was he pressured and forced to throw balls away? Still made some plays here and there. Barkley, 23 for 107, so a bit below the pace he needs to be on to pass Dickerson in terms of the yards per game yesterday. That'll get updated here. We'll figure that out. But Philly has now won 8 in a row, and they are a 10-2 football team. Remember, it was this time last year they beat Buffalo Thanksgiving Sunday late afternoon in Philly to go to 10-1, I think it was, and then they lost out the rest of the way. They do not appear to be a team that could lose out. They're night and day from where they were last year. The speed defensively, Jalen Carter and the group up front, they get the Panthers at home to get to 11-2 during the Skins' bye week. They are near a 2-touchdown favorite in that one. Let's go to Dallas on Thanksgiving Day for the other division games and teams.
Give it to him. Dowdle right up the gut and in. Touchdown, Dallas.
Dowdle backed up his solid game in Washington last week with another really solid game on Thanksgiving Day. 22 carries, 112 yards. Cooper Rush effective with balance. The real key in this game, however, was the turnovers by the Giants. They had a pick six in a game in which they led 7-6. And then they had, that was a pick six, and then there was a fumble as well that led to a touchdown early in the second half in a 13-10 game, and Dallas ended up winning 27-20. Drew Lock got the start for Tommy DeVito. He got sacked a bunch by the Cowboys, who do have at least new life in terms of their overall feeling. Now, they beat Washington. That's a legit good win. The Giant win, not as much. They get the Bengals on Monday Night Football this coming week. Okay, this is their game to either create a real season or to go away for good this year. They're a 6-point underdog at home to Cincinnati on Monday night, Denton, which tells you the odds makers are still not very impressed with the Cowboys. But after that, they got the Panthers. If they were to beat the Bengals and the Panthers back-to-back, the Cowboys would be a 500 football team entering their final 3 games of the year, which aren't easy. Tampa at home, at Philly, and they close with Washington. But they have... Look, Cooper Rush, we've said this before about him. If you can run the football, keep him in down distance, not force him to drop back and throw the football, he's not terrible. But the Cowboys, one on Thanksgiving Day. All right, let's go to Buffalo last night. Snow falling. They had already had a foot to 2 feet south of Buffalo in Orchard Park. This was Josh Allen on a wild play in the third quarter.
Shakir completed. This is behind Cooper, who brought it in. Pitched it back to Allen, who's going to go to the goal line and get in!
No!
Spectacular touchdown!
So on that play, if you were watching it, it gave Buffalo, by the way, a 28-3 lead, a game that was never in doubt. McCaffrey got hurt. He's probably done for the year now. But they threw a pass in the red zone down to about the 10-yard line, 8-yard line, something like that. And Amari Cooper pulled it in. It was not a great throw. And then as he was getting tackled, Josh Allen trailed his own pass, and Cooper pitched it to Allen, who scored. He gets credit for a throwing touchdown and a rushing touchdown on the gets credit for, I think, a throwing touchdown and a rushing touchdown on the same play. I think that's what
it's a throwing touchdown and a receiving touchdown, but he doesn't get credit for a reception.
Ah. He gets credit for the receiving touchdown, even though he didn't catch the ball.
Yeah.
By the way, you could have called forward progress on Amari Cooper, if we're being literal in that spot. James Cook had a big night, had a 65-yard touchdown pass. They were going, Buffalo was, in the snow, with six offensive linemen in the first half, and they just ran it right down San Francisco's throat. They had no chance to stop them. Buffalo at 10-2 on the season, trying to chase down KC for the number one seed in the AFC playoffs. Let's go to Minneapolis for the Cardinals and the Vikings.
Darnold will look to throw for it. Pressure from behind. Hits Jones out of the backfield. Redemption for Aaron Jones.
Redemption for Aaron Jones, because he has developed in Minnesota a fumbling problem and lost one in the game. But Arizona, and they were a smell test pick, and they got it done, actually, plus the points yesterday in the Twin Cities. But there was a 4th-and-8. I don't know if you saw it on that final drive that was the ball game. And Arizona didn't cover Justin Jefferson. That was insane. So they completed that pass, and then that was a goal-to-go situation touchdown pass. Kyler Murray got picked at the end. Minnesota defensively so good, but Arizona had them in trouble in this game. They were up 19-6 at one point in the game, when we're up 22-16. Sam Darnold, you know, 5 sacks again, holds it too long, had a couple of turnover-worthy throws, but he has made big throws when it's mattered, and Minnesota is now 10-2 on this season. By the way, they welcome their old quarterback back to town next week. The Vikings hanging in there, though, with the Lions right now, a game back of Detroit, and they get another game against them as well. Let's go to the Meadowlands for the Seattle Seahawks and the New York Football Jets.
Lucky to get away with an incompletion. Seahawks have the lead with 5.5 minutes remaining.
This was a crazy game. First of all, the longest pick six by a defensive lineman in NFL history. Leonard Williams picked off on a tip ball Aaron Rodgers at the 8-yard line and returned it 92 yards. Understand this. The Jets were about to take a 28-7 second quarter lead. That would have been game over. Instead, it was 21-13. They missed the extra point. And then multiple penalties on the Jets defensively, extended drives on that touchdown that you just heard from Zach Charbonnet, and Seattle beat the Jets 26-20 one. I had the Jets in the smell test, and they were about to go up 28-7 in the second quarter, and they were getting a point and a half. Actually, they went to a one-and-a-half-point favorite at kickoff. Seattle, how about the Seahawks? You know, they started 3-0, then they lost three games, and then they actually, didn't they dip below 500 at one point? Now they've won three in a row over the 49ers, Cardinals, and Jets, and they have a massive game coming up this Sunday in Arizona against the Cardinals. They've got a one-game lead over the Cardinals in the NFC West. But the Cardinals have a better division record. So this would be a split if Arizona gets it, but it would give them really the heads up, or the advantage the rest of the way. The Rams are still in it in the NFC West as well, but Seattle, impressive here over their last three. Let's go to Cincinnati for the Steelers and the Bengals.
Weeks in Pittsburgh. Second down and five. Wilson steps up. Wilson avoids it. Throws on the move and finds Freiermuth for the touchdown. Russell Wilson extends the play.
This is one of those games that I'd like to go back and actually find out what happened. How you get Pittsburgh, you know, in Cincinnati in a 44-38 shootout game. Russell Wilson threw for 414 yards in the football game. And they ended up with 524 yards of offense. Cincinnati, we know, is a bad defensive team. I really feel for your guy this year, Denton. Joe Burrow and Chase, they are just as good as it gets offensively. They can't stop anybody. And when's the last time the Steelers had that kind of a day? I'll tell you, it was back in 2018. Ben Roethlisberger was still the quarterback. The Steelers go to Cincinnati and pretty much snuff out now any long shot opportunity the Bengals had. 44-38 winners. Do you know how this transpired? Because obviously I was watching Skins and you were as well. But Russ throwing for 414? My God.
The Bengals defense is atrocious. It's terrible. One of the worst in the NFL. They can't cover anybody.
They can't. I mean, Pittsburgh put up 524 yards of offense against that team. We got a few more games to get to. Few more Washington-Tennessee thoughts as well to finish up the show next.
Cousins. And intercepted this to go all the way. It's gone. Still, you can kiss him goodbye. Touchdown.
Wasn't necessarily watching this, but Kirk, my guy, had probably the worst game of his career since he became, you know, a bona fide NFL starting quarterback. Threw four picks in a 17-13 home loss to the Chargers. One of them, that pick six, they had the lead and they were driving. That was a fourth down go for it situation. And then one into the end zone when they would have walked away with at least three because they had a chance. They were in field goal range driving late in the game. Rough day for him. I thought it was very interesting to read what Raheem Morris and a lot of the players said, and that is they're riding this out with him. He's a part of the reason that they're 6-6 and still in first place in the division, and there were a lot of other bad performances in recent weeks, but he took all of the blame, as he should have. Missed another pair of field goals, their kicker did, who's now missed, I think, six field goals in four games, something like that, but he might become available for Washington, the kid Koo from Atlanta, but oof, rough day for Kirk, and Atlanta now has lost three in a row. They're 6-6, but because they swept Tampa, they still have the lead, but they've got to go to Minnesota in Kirk's return to play the Vikings this coming Sunday. Let's go to Carolina for Tampa, who got to 500, but just barely.
It's up and through, and the Bucs pull it out in overtime.
Yeah, they were really fortunate. This game, because I wagered on it, I did watch and won it with the Panthers plus the points. There was an incredible catch by Thielen in this game. I don't know if you've seen the highlight yet, Denton. In overtime, put him in field goal range. And on the next play, Chuba Hubbard, who's been a really good back, he had it punched out, and Tampa took over. Carolina was already in position to kick a game-winning field goal in overtime. I just will tell everybody, the guy that has really started to play well since Andy Dalton, remember, got in that car accident, and then Bryce Young got a start. It sounded like, it almost felt like they were going to, you know, just have him sit behind Dalton for a long time. He's played well. He looks like a different guy confidence-wise. They've won, you know, two out of their last four, but their two losses were the walk-off field goal in Arrowhead against the Chiefs and in overtime yesterday at home in a game in which they kind of had won in overtime by three to Tampa Bay. You got to wait on these quarterbacks, man. You can't have a definitive opinion this quickly. Bryce Young, it's nice to see him playing better football. Let's go to Jacksonville for Houston and the Jags.
Before that 30-yard run. And now Mixon again sweeps the left side into the end zone for a Houston touchdown.
Yeah, this game was really about the injury to Trevor Lawrence and the shot that he took, which was a cheap shot, and it was an evicting elimination, kicked out of the game shot that was Aziz Al-Sher for Houston. Bad look, had the fencing posture completely knocked out of the game. Jacksonville loses 23-20. They were in the game. They actually came back and got a touchdown and a little two-point conversion for a little backdoor late cover in that game. Houston's struggling right now. You know, they still have three excellent players on offense: Stroud, Mixon, Nico Collins. There's no doubt about that. But man, they have, you know, they've got a loss to the Titans, and they were lucky to get out of Jacksonville with a win yesterday in their last two games. All right, that'll wrap it up. I did want to mention that Washington's 267 yards rushing yesterday were the most since the season-ending game in 2012 against the Cowboys, when they rushed for 274. Remember, Alfred Morris had 200 in that game. Griffin had 63 yards. That was the, so it, you have to go back 12 years to find a game in which they rushed for this many yards. Also, their 21 points in the first quarter tied a franchise record. There were a lot of things going on in that game yesterday. Felt good to get the win. Chris Russell's got his take next.